January 1st, and this is the Civil War Podcast. It was on this day in 1863 that the Emancipation Proclamation was officially issued. At the signing, Abraham Lincoln stated, "If my name ever goes into history, it will be for this act." Indeed, it remains the event for which Lincoln, the great emancipator, remains most famous. The proclamation was an executive branch order, a war measure, issued to the troops of the armed forces under Lincoln's authority as commander-in-chief. Aimed at destroying the Confederate pillar of strength and engine of war, its primary object was emancipation of those slaves within specific, named territories in rebellion against the United States government. As the proclamation was not a congressional act, it did not have the force of law. For this and other reasons, contemporary and modern critics have argued that it was a meaningless gesture. Southerners rejected Lincoln's authorities in those states affected. Abolitionists preferred a total interdiction of slavery and freedom for all slaves, including those in border and occupied states. And slaves in the post-emancipation era struggled with poverty and disenfranchisement, as the proclamation did not bestow them with protections or citizenship. As one veteran summarized, the emancipated slaves own nothing because nothing but freedom has been given to them. Despite these flaws, the Emancipation Proclamation did have swift and profound effects on the war and lasting reverberations in American society. The most obvious impact was the immediate grant of freedom to hundreds of thousands of slaves in the South. On January 1, 1863, tens of thousands of former slaves became freedmen, and tens of thousands more would follow as word of the proclamation spread and the Union forces fought their way south. Booker T. Washington recalled the day his family learned they were free. "Some man who seemed to be a stranger, a United States officer, I presume, made a little speech and then read a rather long paper, the Emancipation Proclamation, I think. After the reading, we were told that we were all free and could go when and where we pleased. My mother, who was standing by my side, leaned over and kissed her children while tears of joy ran down her cheeks. She explained to us what it all meant, that this was the day for which she had been so long praying, but fearing that she would never live to see." The previous large-scale emancipation in America was the decades-long legal process initiated with the anti-slavery constitutions adopted in the nascent republic. Great Britain underwent a similar change in the same period, and the anti-slavery movement there was supported by the working classes. By the close of 1862, mill workers were suffering greatly due to the cotton famine, engineered by the South's secessionist planters to encourage British intervention and exacerbated by the Union blockade. The famine was not an official Confederate policy, but the British workers chose to direct their ire at the government, passing resolutions condemning the South and supporting the Union. Henry Adams, son of the American ambassador, wrote from Britain that, quote, "The Emancipation Proclamation has done more for us than all our former victories and all our diplomacy. It is creating an almost convulsive reaction in our favor all over this country." Lincoln earned the respect of the industrial workers. Their campaign for democratic reforms of the British political system gained traction as the American ideals of liberty spread across the Atlantic. As a result of the Union's dedication to abolition and its subject support of the Union cause, Great Britain chose not to intervene in the conflict, and the Confederacy was doomed to fight the war out without foreign support. Notwithstanding the decisiveness of the proclamation's influence abroad, it was a politically risky maneuver at home. Public opinion was against it, and there were reports of mass desertions from the armed forces. Troops who had enlisted to save the Union had no interest in fighting for the Negro. This sentiment was particularly common amongst Irish Americans, who composed 9% of the North's soldiery. Other troops responded enthusiastically, their cause being elevated from restoration of the Union to the civilizing work of ending slavery. Wrote Régis de Troubriand, "Now we could march with a prouder step and fight with more confidence. We were no longer merely the soldiers of a political controversy to be decided by the fate of arms. We were now the missionaries of a great work of redemption, the armed liberators of millions of men bent beneath the brutalizing yoke of slavery. The war was ennobled, the object was higher. While meriting well from the country, we deserved well from humanity." No group of soldiers was as enthusiastic as those the Emancipation Proclamation peripherally invited to enlist. In the third-to-last paragraph, it cryptically, quote, "makes known that such persons of suitable condition will be received into the armed service of the United States to garrison forts, positions, stations, and other places, and to man vessels of all sorts in said service." This was a literal call to arms for those recently emancipated. In the months following the proclamation, the War Department recruited the first regiments of United States colored troops. By the war's end, these soldiers accounted for nearly a tenth of the Union forces and proudly fought in all the theaters of war. These positive outcomes were not yet evident on December 31, 1862. Public belief was that Lincoln was wavering on the September promise. He had made no mention of it in his message to Congress and was still lobbying the rebel states to accept compensated emancipation, as had the District of Columbia earlier that year. Watch meetings of abolitionists gathered across the North to anxiously await news that the proclamation was official. The most star-studded was at Boston Music Hall, where the abolitionist heroes Harriet Tubman, William Lloyd Garrison, Frederick Douglass, Wendell Phillips, and Harriet Beecher Stowe rang in the new year without the hoped-for announcement. They needn't have worried. Their fellow abolitionist, Senator Charles Sumner, had met with Lincoln a few days before and confidently reported to a friend, quote, "The president says he would not stop the proclamation if he could, and could not if he would. Hallelujah." You've been listening to the Civil War Podcast, a weekly podcast researched, written, and read by Aaron McGuire, with music by Tom Nagy. Thank you for listening.